Do you know what station you're listening to? This is WHFR Dearborn, 89.3 FM, making waves. And we're coming to you live from Henry Ford College. It is now time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Jay Koronek here with you, and John Conroy, too. Two for one, folks. John is, of course, our WHFR News and Sports Director. How are you doing, John?
Very well, Jay. Thank you. How are you?
Okay, well, I'm moving right along here into our first stories from the Dearborn Times-Herald from this last Wednesday, January 25th. Today is, of course, Friday the 27th, if you're listening to our podcast. You know, things might have changed since Friday the 27th, depending on when you're listening to this. So, but as far as we know, on the 27th, this is pretty much the good stuff. I wanted to mention that there was a couple of headline stories in the papers, the local papers this week. And it's human interest stories, really. It's about people doing nice things for other people. Mm-hmm. And a great example there. We had our homelessness marathon on the air a week ago Thursday, and happy to do that in the evening to draw some attention to the problem that exists really everywhere, pretty much everywhere across the United States, except for a few cities that have taken positive action. Should I refer to our governor's slogan, relentless positive action, which didn't exactly help Flint any, but nonetheless. Really, with a good program, homelessness can be eliminated. And in fact, on Democracy Now! That precedes the show today, they were talking about homelessness issues too. And so just want to bring your attention, if you get a chance to see the Dearborn Times-Herald, Dearborn woman feeds Detroit homeless weekly for over 4 years. So this is not just your once a month and once a year volunteer. This woman is to be definitely congratulated. Hopefully a lot of people like her decide to do this. But in this case, she somehow decided to leave her six-figure job. And correct me if I'm wrong, that's $100,000 a year or more, right? Six figures. Could be as much as $999,900. No, I don't know. But she decided to leave her six-figure job and commit to feeding the homeless in Detroit in 2012. And so she's been doing this since 2012. So almost 5 years now. Her name is Nahid Ayoub, and that's A-Y-O-U-B. And she's been providing food to homeless men, women, and children in Detroit through her own organization, Project Dignity Outreach. So first of all, if she set up this nonprofit, I'm sure it's a nonprofit organization, she can actually raise money for this cause and pay herself a small salary, too. I mean, that's just the overhead of running a nonprofit, totally legal. Nothing wrong with that. Nonprofits are not in business to lose money. They have to have some money to keep paying their bills, of course. And so I'm just saying she left her six-figure job, but she probably was able to get all the money she needed, depending on her lifestyle, and I don't know what that is, her choice, to make herself comfortable, because she set up the organization and they can do fundraising for the cause too. And it was all because of one encounter with a homeless U.S. veteran that opened her eyes to giving back like this. She was working previously in advertising with the Detroit newspaper company, who are always laying off, so I wonder if they were close to suggesting she leave anyway, and would always sit on the corner on my way home. So this is one of those homeless people, or people who say by a little sign that they're homeless, but you're never quite sure, of course, as you're driving by. Well, is it just a ruse to earn some money, or, you really don't know. I mean, there's no way of knowing, but And therefore, you're hesitant to give money to someone if they're not really in need. But anyway, one day in talking to this person, he said something to her, and she says, "I followed him." Wow, I followed him, and that's where my journey began.
As part of that story, she discovered that he had no legs when he took the blankets off the right. middle part of his yes. Place, his wheelchair, and found no legs at all. So she then, you know, believed what he was talking about and
yeah.
began, you know, working very much harder to help that situation out.
Yeah, she had to do something there. So good for her. And, of course, not everyone can give up their six-figure job to dedicate to this nonprofit concept, but there is a need for that. Now, that it can't all be done that way. And as I said, and as I think our homelessness marathon made clear, government can organize and save itself a lot of money, in fact, to get the homeless off the streets and also to find them jobs, get them medical treatment and find them jobs. In the long term, that's a lot less costly than some sort of police enforcement or renting vans to corral the homeless and carry them out to the suburbs and drop them off or something. I mean, it's done in other parts of the country. I don't think it's done in this part of the country. But I'm just saying I hear a lot these days about, well, let the private initiatives, let all the nonprofits do it. Government shouldn't have to get involved. But if government got involved on this, and this has been proven in many other good-sized cities, there wouldn't be any homelessness anymore. The problem would be solved, and everybody would be better off, and it would cost everybody a lot less. But in lieu of that awareness, thanks to Naheed Ayoub and others for helping out. I think that's great. So a little thank you. Is that called a shout-out?
A shout-out, yep.
To her.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, looking through the Times Herald. yeah, as long as we stumble upon it, there'll be a concert of from Henry Ford College Big Band tomorrow. Let me grab this here. And it's singer Karen Newman is joining the HFC's Big Band Bop and Pop concert tomorrow, January 28th. That's Saturday, folks. And it's going to be at the Michael A. Guido Theater in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center here in Dearborn. And, of course, they can afford to do this. That's not a cheap place to rent. But thanks to the Rotary Club of Dearborn, they have made a donation there. And they also are raising money for scholarships. For the music program students at the college, about 20 students the scholarships go to approximately 20 students currently attending the Dearborn Public Schools, and this is the 100th year of the Rotary International Foundation too. So happy birthday to them, I guess. Now ticket prices for this concert are $25 to $35. Again, it's a donation. It's a very worthy cause, and you can find out more information by, you can call, I think this is the box office number, but tickets are available for purchase in advance by calling 313-943, which is a city number, obviously, 2354, okay? And again, 313-943-2354. And just a very worthy cause. And hopefully because of Karen Newman's presence there, she has done some annual Christmas concerts, been featured on two Christmas specials broadcasts on Channel 4 in Detroit. And she has a song, Christmas Eve on Woodward Avenue, is her tribute to Detroit, is a popular hit in the Detroit region that's played every holiday season. Wow.
She also sings the national anthem at Red Wings.
Well, games. That's most people know her from that. That's and she's a helped thing. A lot of other nonprofit organizations too.
Yep.
So
what time is that concert, Jay?
It's just in time. No, it's just they actually and this
8
is
o'clock
the
Broadway.
This is a story from HFC. This is their press release here. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. They don't put down the time. Huh. But it's almost always 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock is probably.
But certainly call the ticket box office, and I think that's over at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center. You can go there in person. They're still open today, I'm sure, until 4 or 4:30. 313-943-2354. Now, not taking anything from that, we do have to mention there's another big band concert, which is sort of it's a big band that's been around for decades in the community, and it's under the direction of Donald McAlpine. And they're going to do a big band concert this Sunday, January 29th at 3 p.m. We've got the time on that one.
Yep.
It's going to be at 3 p.m. Sunday, and it's free. Okay? But and seating is on a first-come, first-served basis. Although they also give an information number to be that ticket box office, 313 at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center, 943-2354. Certainly, if you have the money and want a really nice night out for a good cause, and, well, Karen Newman is going to be there tomorrow, but not Sunday, okay, then you might want to go tomorrow night, January 28th. That's the HFC Big Band, really scholarship benefit. But on Sunday, another big band concert, and they have great people in it, and they do a great job under the direction of Donald McAlpine, sort of a community big band. And they're going to be there 3 o'clock Sunday, January 29th. So you got a couple big band events this weekend. And, hey, you could go to both.
Yes, sir.
Sunday won't cost anything extra, right? Okay.
No.
Okay. There's some tips here from Joseph Lehman, and turns out on the editorial page of the Times-Herald. Lehman is the current president of the Mackinac Center of Public Policy. Of course, they're that very conservative think tank. I don't think you can call it a think tank if you're already thinking in one direction.
Right.
But nonetheless, he has a very reasonable thing there, because, of course, Governor Snyder said that we need to spend $4 billion more each year for at least 10 years or so to catch up on all the infrastructure needs. Yes, that includes replacing water pipes that are leaching lead into water, not just in Flint, but other communities, but also roads and bridges and so on. And he has some tips that our legislature should keep in mind, some basic principles. And they're all good. We've even said them here, too. We want high-quality, well-funded roads as a public good that serves taxpayers' interests. Okay, so high-quality roads. So make sure, and when it goes out to bids, make sure that they're bidding the highest quality road, so it's not going to fall apart soon. Okay. Although they suggest retain the user fee principle, those who drive more should pay more. He even suggested another point here, and there's 8 points in the article, that perhaps all roads should only be paid for by the people that drive on them. So I wonder how much that would raise the gas tax. Now, gas taxes in Michigan are going up about a nickel a gallon. Maybe they already have. They were supposed to start this year, and I think they might already be in place, but certainly they will be in February. And that money is supposed to go to help fix the roads, but it's not enough money. It's a pittance. I think it's $700,000 a year after a couple of years that'll be coming in because of that. But the roads and the bridges and now the water pipes are so bad in Michigan that Governor Snyder is not just making up an alternative fact here. He had a whole commission looking into this and coming up with the numbers, $4 billion a year, because everything is so in such bad shape. I mean, when he first came into office, he said we need $1.2 billion a year. And because we haven't been spending and fixing, you can't just do a cheap fix anymore, a cheap patch. You have to rebuild the whole thing, really, from the ground up, whether it's a bridge or a road. I mean, it's that's why it's getting more expensive, and that's too bad. So I don't know how a user fee by itself could be afforded by most people. They're already raising, because to get the $700 million registration costs, They've started charging extra for people registering a hybrid or an electric car because they don't need gas, so the gas tax wouldn't get to them, you know, so they wouldn't be paying their share to fix the roads. But I actually think it's a public service, because roads we need for buses and taxis and Uber and Lyft drivers, and we need all the products to get to us in a prompt, safe way. We're talking about all the trucks. So even the truck drivers can't pay for it all themselves in terms of extra usage fees. Although right now we're not charging truck drivers who are using the roads of Michigan anywhere near what other states charge in order to help fix the roads. So that's certainly a problem. Also in Michigan, we allow those double trailers, super long, super heavy trucks to use our roads. Many other states don't. Why? Because it breaks up their roads too fast. And so I think there's still going to have to be a component of payments from all taxpayers in Michigan to keep the roads in good shape. And now we're so far behind. But he has some good basic principles, and I suggest if you've got the paper, you should read that. And all, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, I think they should all look at these. They're a good, reasonable, and I don't often say this about the Mackinac Center, but it's a good, reasonable approach to try to maximize all these principles. If they can get it out of politics, then this is a reasonable approach. So there, I said it.
Yeah. So. Jade, I just wanted to mention two other constituents that would benefit by better roads. Our poor bicyclists and pedestrians that use the roads as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking about roads, and we might as well just, because they say, this is good on radio, to follow the train of thought. Choo-choo. Okay. It's called a segue. it's a segment that is following logically the first segment. I pulled up Craig Foran's editorial from the News Herald, the Downriver newspaper, for this week. And he does talk about President Trump, of course. And a lot of people say, well, I know what he's going to say. He doesn't like him, and Trump is, yeah. Well, you read it for yourself. But talking about roads, he talks about, of course, the Downriver I-75 construction.
Yep.
Yeah. And he says, there's something happening in our backyard that's impossible to ignore, and this has nothing to do with politics. In a week and a half from now, River Rouge and Lincoln Park could see an explosion of rush hour traffic that neither city ever could have expected, thanks to the closure of southbound I-75 on February 4th, which is next week, Friday? No, Saturday. Wednesday is the 1st, so Friday's the 3rd, so it'll be Saturday.
Saturday, yep.
Okay. So you get a weekend to get used to it, and then you're in trouble on Monday. If you're coming back on southbound I-75, okay? Southbound I-75 is what's closing there. And it's going to go on for 2 years. 2 years, folks. The traffic will be diverted to alternate routes, with the official detour out of Detroit taking traffic on I-96 west to I-275 and then south.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that's a long way out of your way. You know, I-96, it goes west, and I-275 has got to be at least 15 miles west.
Well, and 275 south will take you to either Sibley Road or Eureka Road, like you said, a much further direction away out of your way as far as the cities are concerned.
Yeah,
down the way.
So much.
You got to come back, you know.
Yeah, so much, right. No, that's very, very strange, but. Okay. He goes on to say then, he says, that, of course, bypasses Downriver completely. But for those who work in Detroit but live Downriver, like Craig Foran does, our options are West Jefferson, Ford Street, Dix, and I-94 to Telegraph.
Mm-hmm.
So you take I-94 west to Telegraph and then come south on Telegraph. According to the Michigan Department of Transportation, he goes on to say, 37 million vehicles a year drive on that stretch of I-75. And according to my math, he says, that's 8.5 million each way each year, or 32,500 each way each workday, Monday through Friday, or 16,250 vehicles going south every workday. That's right, about 16,000 cars and trucks will be looking for an alternate route during rush hour, and there's actually two of them, of course, morning and afternoon, each workday for the next 2 years. And downriver traffic is going to be funneling through those few surface roads, which means that even if West Jefferson gets only a slice of that traffic, that's still hundreds, if not thousands, of vehicles each day heading through downtown River Rouge and downtown Lincoln Park and other side streets. Which makes it the ultimate joke played on Rouge. 3 years of no traffic, thanks to a bridge closing, followed by 2 years of incredible traffic coming up, thanks to another bridge closing. So he concludes by saying, I don't know what makes me shake my head more as we wrap up in January. Mr. Trump and the size of his crowd, Mr. Snyder and his push for more pregnancies. Yes, if you didn't hear, one of the big things that Snyder said in his speech, which is really silly, he's suggesting that everybody in Michigan have more kids.
Right. Yep. When I saw that in the paper, I said,
not enough kids.
Yeah.
So we've got to have more kids. You know, the last, was a dictator who said that, who encouraged more kids? Mussolini.
Yeah.
Because he wanted, and he said this in the 20s, because he knew he needed more young men ready to go to war for him in his battles with Ethiopia. There's a crazy one. We're going to invade Ethiopia. Where? Why? It's not even near them. You know, it's in Africa, and it's a, and they, so they attacked with their full Italian army, you know, with tanks and bazookas and rifles, and they had spears. The natives there had spears that, you know, wouldn't, that's all they had. And they attacked with the full modern, and he won. Guess what? He won. Mm-hmm. Why? Anyway, Hitler loved him, so they formed an alliance, of course. There's nothing like a crazy dictator to latch on to. Yeah. Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin. Where did I hear that? Did that just sneak out of my mouth? Okay. So that, and so I had to say that about Mr. Snyder too. If you hadn't heard, that's one of the crazy things that he spent only 30 seconds talking about Flint, that still where they still can't drink the water. But he's recommending that we all have more kids. Thank you very much, Mr. Snyder. Yes. But anyway, so there's some good news there. And River Rouge businesses come afternoon rush hour on February 6th, Monday, February 6th, should get a little more business, or at least people will be finding out what is there and maybe stopping off sometime in the near future. As long as, you know, especially if there's a lot of traffic and you're not going anywhere, stop off for a little food or something, or pick up your dry cleaning or something, as long as you're stuck, you know.
A little bit of happy hour action.
Yeah. So that's our traffic report, I guess. All right. And this is, I don't want to be negative here, and certainly not saying anything against the Lebanese American Heritage Club, but buried in the Times Herald is the fact that they have been awarded a grant of $500,000. And of course, it's to help various programs in the community. However, they got the grant. Let me just read the detail. They got the $500,000 grant from the Department of Homeland Security. And if you read the details, it gives the Lebanese American Heritage Club the ability to build prevention programs that address the root causes of violent extremism and deter individuals who may already be radicalizing to violence. That's the Department of Homeland Security's website. That's what they said. And I just think that's very profiling-like. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think people get radicalized all over the place in America. I mean, the majority of shootings recently really didn't have anything to do with the Lebanese particularly, or even Muslims particularly, or the Muslim religion at all. And it's only been a few incidents that even had a distant connection. And here, $500,000 of taxpayer money from all around the United States is going to the Lebanese American Heritage Club. It's going to be after-school programming to the community to address the root causes of violent extremism and deter individuals who may already be radicalizing to violence. But that assumes what? All people from the Middle East are radicalizing right now, or an awful lot of them? And I think there's plenty of other crazies around that are radicalizing or just decide to shoot somebody. It's just, I think it's money wrongly spent. I mean, Department of Homeland Security is going a little nuts here, but I think they're guilty of racism. They're profiling themselves.
Well, they're going a little bit further overboard with the $500,000.
I mean, what evidence, I'm sorry I have to ask for facts here, what evidence do they have that there's this pool of radicalizing that's going on among Lebanese Americans in this area? I mean, where is their evidence that needs $500,000?
Seems like
to talk them out of it? What are they going to do, talk them out of it? What? You know, it's like tough love on drugs or crime or something. It doesn't really work. Well, love part might work, but the government is more and more profiling people for no good reason. I mean, there's no evidence. And so I'm going to this other segue here from the Arab American News this week. The story is, as you might expect, headline is, Arab and Muslim Americans outraged by Trump's plan to ban Muslim immigration. For example, one of his decrees, which may not happen because a lot of executive orders from the president never really get fulfilled. I mean, President Obama tried a few and was criticized. We were doing too many. Trump's already done more executive orders than the whole 8 years of Barack Obama. But the point is, they often can't be fully implemented until Congress votes some laws or changes some rules and regulations. And here's the story. From Dearborn. It did not take long for President Trump to deliver on campaign promises to bar Muslims and refugees from entering the United States. On the fifth day of his presidency, Trump signed a slew of anti-immigrant executive actions and intends to soon order a suspension on refugees and visas for citizens of Syria and six other Middle Eastern and African countries. By the way, this story was posted to their website late last night, almost at midnight, so this is very fresh.
Hot news.
Point of view, yes. Mm-hmm. And you may have heard about these orders already in the national media. I know that. So I won't go into the details there. But there's humanitarian activists. It goes on to say some details there. Humanitarian activists like Omar Abdrabo, who helped newly arrived Syrian refugees settle in Michigan, said that while enacting policies for immigrant screening is vital, banning families fleeing destruction and looking for a second chance is insensible. A quote from Abdrabo, they are not violent people. They are survivors. He added that crime among refugees has historically capped below 5%, and that as small business owners, those same refugees have been crucial to the revitalization of the American economy. Hussam Atal, or El Doctor, is a laboratory scientist and Syrian immigrant who many refugees have come to trust, and he has helped them settle in Grand Rapids. He said blocking refugee admissions is unnecessary as refugees are already extensively vetted and that the president is attempting to score easy points through these actions to satisfy those who elected him. And we have our Mac computer is restarting itself.
Sort of nice tone on there.
Always the same tone, just... Whenever it wants to, it restarts.
It comes back.
Yeah, whenever there's an update of some sort. Anyway, so there's a lot of specifics in this article. And again, you can go to ArabAmericanNews.com and read it for yourself. Or this weekend, their published printed paper is available free. And there's about 8 or 10 Michigan-based and locally based Arab Americans who are knowledgeable in these issues about refugees and resettlement and immigration, and they're all quoted in this article explaining why this is really a crazy proposal, although I'm sure it makes somebody in some distant place in the United States who really doesn't have the involvement we do here in Dearborn feel, oh, yes, that's a good plan. Keep them out. And they have no idea what the issue is. They don't know anything about these people, and it's just unfortunate that this just seems to be a political ploy. Of course, he promised it, and maybe a lot of people voted for him just because that's what they thought they needed.
Well, it's a headline grabber. That's what it's all about.
Well,
make a
I guess
big,
so.
Make a big splash.
Yeah, you know? But good job of giving local facts, Arab American News, in that story there.
Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't want to put down, I hope the Lebanon Heritage Center, I'm sure they're going to make great use of the money, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm not sure what the evidence is. They need $500,000. How close to being fully radicalized are the Lebanese American students in this area? Somebody have evidence for that? I mean, come on. I just, $500,000. Yeah. That's big government for you, but that's probably what endorsed totally by our new president, too, because of the other policies. All right, moving along. And we have the pressing guy, John. Okay. This is the new WHFR Journal, where you can hear the pages turning on the air.
Do you want to get to the Lessonberry yet?
Well, I do want to get to that, too, yes. Yep. But in the pressing guide from this Wednesday, January 25th, again, another personal story. And it's always good to have an individual human perspective. A high school teacher in the area, Dearborn High School, in fact. She's a language arts teacher. She and her 13-year-old daughter traveled to the nation's capital to take part last Saturday in the Women's March on Washington. So it's a wonderful story about their experiences. There's a picture of them, in fact, on the front page there. And you get sort of a very human individual perspective on from a local resident on what they saw and why they went there and what they're going to be trying to do now in the future more, too. So again, a shout out. Should have more people expressing their opinions in ways that get people's attention. And if there's a lot of people, that's good. And yes, where's that little story about the future laws in Michigan? There. No? Nope. Okay.
I don't have.
Okay, we've got a missing story here somewhere. Oh my goodness! What did I do with that? Okay, well I'll sum it up. I just saw, because there wasn't much detail to it, but Michigan radio had a story that four or five states in the United States are quickly running new laws through their legislature to prevent or to squelch as much protest as possible. And they included Michigan on that list. We were one of the four states mentioned. So what are our legislators, our Republican legislature and Republican governor, doing these days to take away our right to protest? Now, one of them in Minnesota, it makes a little bit of sense, but they're increasing the fines and they're moving it up from a misdemeanor to a big-time felony if you protest on a highway, if you block a highway and stop traffic and so on. They're going to arrest you. You'll be a felony convicted person, which is on your record forever. You can never vote again, okay? At least not in Michigan. There are some states that allow felons to vote after they serve their sentence and so on, pay their debt to society. So I don't know what's going on in Michigan. We'll have to get Abdullah Hamoud here sometime soon to see how bad things are up there in the legislature. We'll give them another month or so to settle down. Okay, well, and I don't know the reason for this, but the Henry Ford Museum is changing its name. I mean, they already, a couple of years ago, changed their whole complex, everything there, to one name called The Henry Ford.
Right.
Which I thought was the stupidest thing ever. I mean, I was a member at the time that year. I sent emails. They didn't listen. Okay. The Henry Ford. That's, well, now at The Henry Ford, the museum is a longer name. I better we'll just call it the museum. Now it's going to be called the Henry Ford Museum of American Innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to talk about that Canadian innovation or that Mexican innovation. No, that wouldn't be good. Only American innovation. So, you know, to the inventors, to the people that start manufacturing something new and different, like Henry Ford did, although he didn't invent the automobile, folks, sorry. Yes, he kind of helped put the assembly line concept together. Into
right.
place
right.
and made a fortune from that idea and other things. But, in fact, Mercedes-Benz actually had the first gas-powered vehicle. Although somebody might point out, but it was only three-wheeled. Okay, all right. It was only three wheels. That's the way it goes. But nonetheless, so now you can't just say Henry Ford Museum. It's Henry Ford Museum of American Innovation. They do have that TV show, and I can't remember when it runs, but there's a former comedian that hosts it. He's not being funny when he does it, and it's called Innovation Nation. And it's shot right over here, and it's in its second or third season.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know if it's on you know, one of the major networks, or I think it's Saturday morning, so I sleep in, so I never catch it. But it's supposedly a great little show, and it features different exhibits at the museum, too. So that's called Innovation Nation. So that's how they got the maybe decided, well, all the media thinks of us as the innovation place now because of that successful little TV series. And so, I don't know, just seems a little crazy, but what's in a name? A lot, actually, I guess. So hope it works out for them. Great things are happening over there, and they are a nonprofit organization. We do endorse your support of them as well as your attendance for all the many different activities they have. And, John, you were going to mention what's continuing, at least through this month, with the engine exposed.
Yep.
Oh, he's digging for that story, too. I surprised him. Okay. We have so many papers here, so many stories. Yeah. Okay, he's got it.
Yes, we have the engines exposed. Setup is going to go through February 28th at Henry Ford Museum. And this will give auto enthusiasts a rare opportunity to look under the hoods of some of the most iconic vehicles ever made. More than 60 vehicles inside that Driving America exhibit will have their hoods popped, and including a look at the 1926 Rolls-Royce new Phantom limousine and the iconic 1967 Mark IV engine that powered Ford to victory at Le Mans 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was there, you know, that very day.
Yes,
yeah, at Le Mans.
I remember saying that story before.
Yep.
Guests are invited to Driving America's Car Court to discuss the Henry Ford's world-class car collection and explore automotive innovations every day with presenters. And topics change daily. And I know when I've gone to some of their exhibits, the topics that change, it's worth it to go more than one day a week because those topics are widespread, and you can learn a whole bunch of you can learn many more ideas about these innovations by going and more than one day at a time.
And that's going until?
February 28th.
Okay, so it's a whole other month for Engines Exposed at the Henry Ford, actually in the Henry Ford Museum of
American
Innovation.
Yes,
there we go. Thank you. So we've learned that. Also, a little story here in the paper, which obviously they sent to the paper, but the Henry Ford... We just mentioned them, right? They marked record attendance last year. So whatever they're doing, name change didn't hurt, I guess. More than 1.78 million guests, almost 2 million people, visited its campus right here in Dearborn, a 5% increase from 2015. And we do suggest, if you are a local person, sure, take advantage of all the different programs, all the different special exhibits. And the best way to do that is to get an annual membership. And then you know, every time you hear something, or you will be notified, you know, several ways about what's happening for that week or whatever, take the family. It's a great family destination, and you'll learn a lot with many exhibits about history and technology. And of course, the village itself, which is open about 7 months a year, usually starting in May, is a wonderful historical recreation of the past, at least in the early 18th century, I would say, maybe up to the middle of the 18th century, I don't know, something like that. And so we wish them well.
Yeah, as well as the IMAX movie theaters in that.
Yeah, well, you know,
Henry Ford
I think
Museum,
that, I
but it's
say,
not
John,
part
I think,
of the same
I think
thing.
They've, well, it is part, but they've changed. I don't think it's IMAX anymore.
Oh, no? Okay.
Or if it is, they're not showing any of the IMAX, official IMAX movies. They're just showing large screen versions. Which is too bad, but they just couldn't afford the rentals. They didn't get enough people there to actually afford, because running an IMAX movie cost a lot of money, and so they chose to do, I would say, second rate or third rate, not name movies like that. But they're still showing movies there. So yes, I'm just saying that the official IMAX type of movie. Maybe most people wouldn't notice the difference, but big screen, nice auditorium, so consider that too sometime. And we did mention, well, homeless veterans. A little story here about Debbie Dingell. She's inviting students to take part in Valentine's for Veterans. Yes, February is coming up. WHFR, in fact, we're going to have a Valentine week. Yeah, yeah. John hasn't heard about the details of that yet.
No,
we'll,
I haven't.
We'll tell you more, because one day is not enough.
One day is not enough.
That's right. One day is not enough. Anyway, on this project that Debbie Dingell came up with, again, she's sponsoring us. Students are invited to craft handmade Valentine cards for local veterans in time to brighten their holiday. And there's details there about how to do it. But Valentine's can be dropped off before February 9th. So that's coming up, folks. Okay. February 9th. That's a week from next Wednesday or something. No, a week from next Friday. Well, pretty soon. Okay. And she does have it. And one reason I wanted to read the story was her Dearborn office is on Outer Drive, 19855 West Outer Drive, Suite 103E. Not F or G, but E, 103E. So I don't know exactly where that is. Could that be, I don't know, is that north of Michigan Avenue? There's a couple of twin tower office buildings there. Yeah. Wherever 19855 West Outer Drive is. Good to know, because if you have any concerns or issues, you can go right to the office. You don't have to even make a phone call or send an email. They usually open normal business hours, 5 days a week, I guess. And she does that because her district is so elongated by gerrymandering. She has an Ypsilanti office, too, which is 301 West Michigan Avenue, Suite 400. But, get this. Participants can also call the Dearborn office. So here's their phone number, because they will come and pick up the cards from you. So if you're a teacher or something, you collect them, they can come to your house to get them. 313-278-2936. 313-278-2936, Debbie Dingell's Dearborn office.
I'm not sure how many years that program has been in effect, but it's been...
You've heard of it before?
It's happened before, okay. And been a good collection of Valentine's cards made.
Well, again, they need them somewhat in advance in order to distribute them, but I don't know if they can send them overseas fast, but we only have 200 military bases overseas.
Only
200. Right, so right. We better do a lot of Valentine's, folks. Okay. Happy story here is that, it was yesterday, but happy birthday, Michigan. Okay. And here's, I think it's important. History is important. Glenn O'Cray would agree with me. Glenn is the current president of the Dearborn Historical Society. But here's a 4-minute and 30-second report from Michigan Radio about Michigan's birthday, and why it was a pretty good thing, because it solved a war we were having at the time with Ohio. Here's the whole story if you don't remember. Oh my goodness. Look at that. I got a file not found. What? See, the computer restarted here. Wait a minute. We'll find it. No, we can't find it.
No.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we'll come back to it then. Let's see. Wait, I've got How Immigrants Are Saving Michigan, Jack Lessenberry. We were talking about immigrants a lot today. So let's listen to that. If I can find we have the story, I know, but if we can find the segment, we'll get that in too. Here we go. Jack Lessenberry from Michigan Radio also.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. Nobody knows exactly what our new president will do or be able to do. He hasn't always been consistent, and much of what he wants would have to get through Congress. But one of the things he has been fairly consistent about is immigration. He's still promising to build a wall and has said he wants to force every undocumented person to leave. Overall, while he hasn't talked specifically about stopping illegal immigration, Donald Trump has given a clear indication he isn't crazy about that either. As he said in his inaugural address, from this day forward, every decision on immigration will be made to benefit American workers and American families. Well, that's pretty straightforward, but if the president looks at the evidence, it's pretty clear that the best prescription for prosperity is to allow not less, but more immigration. The numbers very clearly tell the tale. If there's one thing everybody agrees on, it's that we need more residents with college degrees. Yes, being a skilled welder or an electrician is a fine thing, and there are, as the governor likes to say, plenty of jobs for those folks. But having more residents with at least a university bachelor's degree is going to be the key to regaining prosperity in this century and the future. Michigan, like surrounding old line manufacturing or Rust Belt states, has had trouble holding on to educated young people. But there is a glimmer of hope. There's a feature in the Sunday Detroit Free Press, a little box tucked into a corner called Raw Data. Yesterday, it revealed the surprising news that between 2013 and 2015, Michigan gained a net 19,704 new residents with at least a bachelor's degree. That was more than Ohio or any other Great Lakes state. The item quoted Kurt Metzger, the demographer who is now mayor of Pleasant Ridge, as saying that this indeed puts us in a good position compared to our neighbors and rivals. But when I looked more closely at the numbers, it was clear that the brain drain of our native-born citizens hasn't stopped. During those years, about 109,000 educated people moved into Michigan from other states. More than 135,000 Americans with college degrees left. We were saved by the arrival of more than 46,000 college-educated immigrants. These are not people who came to take the jobs of Americans. They came for jobs employers couldn't fill, and increasingly, to start businesses, pay taxes, and create jobs. Governor Rick Snyder knows this. That's why he's repeatedly asked Washington to let Michigan have more special visas for highly educated immigrants. Last year, a state government report, The Contributions of New Americans in Michigan, revealed that immigration has boosted our economy and helped pull us out of the Great Recession. Immigrant-owned businesses generated more than $600 million in income and employed more than 150,000 people. The report also said we'd be better off if many of the 125,000 undocumented immigrants in Michigan were made legal. This would give us more tax revenue rather than helping terrorism. I don't expect these facts to sway our new president, but I would hope some members of Congress would look at the numbers before approving any measure that might damage our fragile economy.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Happy birthday, Michigan. It was 180 years ago today, January 26, 1837. Michigan became a state, the 26th state to join the Union. But before that could happen, there was some housekeeping to do, namely settle the fight between Michigan and Ohio over a little strip of land called the Toledo Strip. With us now from the Michigan History Center is our state archivist, Mark Harvey. Mark, we know this is the Toledo War, but is that term really accurate?
I think it is. It was a dispute over that stretch of land around Toledo, and it was a armed insurrection or armed conflict.
Now, no one died, right?
No one died. No. There's been legends over the years that the only casualty was a pig. I think that's been disproven, although it's a great story.
It is a good story.
Also that another Ohioan had gotten in a fight in a tavern and was stabbed. So those are things that are just good stories, but there were no casualties.
So when and why did this fight start brewing? I mean, what was the big deal over this site where Toledo sits today?
The dispute went all the way back to the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, where some not very good surveying instructions said that the boundary of the state would be drawn from the southern point of Lake Michigan all the way due east. And that's where the dispute came in, is whether that included Toledo or not. Some thought it went to the mouth of the Maumee River. Some thought it just went straight across. And so that's where the dispute stemmed from, and early maps all showed Toledo as part of Michigan, and we have letters addressed to Toledo, Michigan in the collection.
And my understanding is Ohio kind of outmuscled Michigan. It had more clout in Washington than Michigan did.
Yeah, they became, you know, as much as we don't like to admit it, they became a state before us. So they had representatives in Congress. We were still a territory. We became a territory the same year they became a state. So we had less sway, obviously, because we didn't have representation. But despite that, we went ahead and just ratified our own constitution and elected a governor anyway.
But Michigan really couldn't become a state till all of this was settled, and there were tensions. I understand you have some letters. Who are these letters from that you have?
Well, they're from all different people, but the particular one I brought with me today was from George R. Griswold. So if you're familiar with Detroit street names, that name will jump out. And he became our first clerk of the House and a legislator after that. But at the time, in 1835, he was the captain of the Detroit Rifle Corps.
Okay. So was he talking smack about the Buckeyes?
A little bit. He wrote a letter to His Excellency Stephen's T. Mason, our governor, also nicknamed the boy governor because he was so young.
Yeah.
And he wrote him this letter, which I can just read for you.
Sure.
It says, should the crisis arrive in which it would be deemed necessary for the maintenance of our laws and the protection of our citizens to require military aid from the arrogant encroachments of Ohio, be pleased to accept in the name and on behalf of the members of the Detroit Rifle Corps their undivided services in defense of our rights.
Those arrogant encroachers in Ohio.
Yeah, they're still up to that.
Now, it all got settled, didn't it, by what? Clearly we know Ohio got Toledo, and what, we got the Upper Peninsula.
Yeah, at the time on maps it was listed as no man's land, so it was sort of a, you know, bittersweet. We said we grudgingly took the UP, only to find out later that it was filled with, you know, vast wealth of copper and iron ore. So it worked out for us.
And I'm wondering how the folks living in the Upper Peninsula felt. Were they happy about becoming part of Michigan, or was that maybe not such a great thing for them?
Last I checked, I think they would prefer to be the state of Superior, but you know, that's an ongoing debate.
You know, it is interesting, Mark. It seems like a funny little war, but it does show us that it's a challenge to keep things smooth between the states. And you think about it, it was just 24 years later, we had the Civil War.
Yeah, I think it's after 180 plus years, it's easy to chuckle at it. But I think it's also important to remember that there were people lined up across the field with weapons ready to do battle over this important, what they thought at the time was a vital port that would lead to the Mississippi River.
Mark Harvey is our state archivist, and we're glad you were with us, Mark, to kind of help us mark Michigan's 180th birthday and filling us all in on the Toledo War. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So happy birthday to the state of Michigan from all of us here at WHFR. And I'm sure glad we didn't go to war with Ohio.
Nope, we don't need to.
And only a pig died, or we think maybe a pig died over it all. So that's the kind of wars I think, well, I'm sorry for the pig, but, you know.
Could be a lot worse.
At least nobody got killed.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so the statehood saved us from a war. And who knows, maybe only, if it would have gone on, I mean, couple hundred people. It looks like it wasn't a major battle that would have ensued, but it would have gone on for years and years and years, too. So it's good we could resolve it that way, I think. And 180 years and still having problems. But I did hear about the state of Superior still being bandied about by people who lived in the UP, or as they're known, Upers.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't, until I read the story here, the printed story, I didn't realize that nickname was Upers, Y-O-O-P-E-R-S. But, the problem with that is other than tourism, they don't currently have any industry up there to survive as a state by themselves. I'm not sure tourism would be enough. They had to build a lot more hotels and maybe gambling casinos or something to get more people to visit, because they don't have the copper in the ground. They don't have the minerals anymore. They're pretty much depleted to have a thriving industrial base.
Well, Jeff Daniels has done the Upers pretty well with a couple of plays in the last 10, 15 years.
Yes, he's an outdoorsman. I'm sure he's visited a few thousand times.
Yep, and he out of Chelsea, that Purple Rose Theater has done very well.
Yep,
to get the Upers. Well, what they do is, what he has done is send proceeds, a percentage of those proceeds, to various charities in the UP.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah. Okay. Well, yes, we have more big stories here, but only about 8 minutes to go. Now, today at 2 o'clock, following the show, is going to be Highway 61, Best in the Blues, until 4 o'clock. And that's going to be hosted by Mike Holloway, who will also be with you from 4 to 6 for his regularly scheduled show. Kitty Love is out ill today. And we wish her the best recovery. And come on back here as soon as you can. But the Best in the Blues will begin from 2 o'clock and go to 6 o'clock today. League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, they've got always a lot of things going on, very active local group. And I did miss a meeting last night, but it was WHFR staff meeting that I had to attend and a class I had to teach. But nonetheless, they've begun 2 sessions on financing Michigan's government. So discussions, really it's consensus finding among groups of League of Women Voters in Michigan on taxation and budgeting. What should be done here in Michigan? They're going to try to give some suggestions to our Republican legislators and to our governor. Ha, 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 ha. Good luck with that. But that's great. They're going to be looking at the facts and trying to see what they can support. And the next meeting on that is going to be on a Wednesday night, February 8th. So that's a week from next February 1st. Okay. And members and league friends are all welcome. And it's a meeting is at Betty Cushman's house. She's the current president of League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, 21945 Wildwood. That's one block south of Ford Road, half block west of Gulfview Drive. Very informal, no preparation needed. But if you can bring a copy of the materials that are on the League of Women Voters Michigan, that's lwvmi.org website, that would be great, but they'll probably have copies there for people that just want to drop in. So, again, you can get information at League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, which is lwvddh.org. And if you just want to put in League of Women Voters, go to the national website, and then there's a link there that will get you to the Michigan one and then down to Dearborn Heights, too. So if you're not aware of that group, it's a great thing. By the way, on Thursday, February 23rd, from 7 to 9 p.m., there's going to be an all-member consensus with introduction by Mayor Jack O'Reilly himself of Dearborn. That's going to be on the first floor lounge, Christ Episcopal Church in Dearborn. So if you're not a member, I think you can get on their email list for free. So that's another thing you could do. And as I said, many of their sessions or the special events are open to everyone for free. And so highly recommend you follow their work there. They also, looking ahead too, they're co-sponsoring a Stop the Nuclear Arms Race. How many years have we tried to do that? Universal Declaration on Disarmament, special session by the Democracy Institute Consortium here in Dearborn. Here, it's going to be on Henry Ford College main campus, Wednesday, March 1st, 6 to 8 p.m., when I also can't attend. So I hope other people attend. Tell me about it, because I'm totally in support of that initiative, too. Of course, we don't want to be blowing ourselves to bits before we can figure out how we're supposed to live together without blowing ourselves to bits. And so many things coming up here on these agendas, but we'll try to keep you informed. Sorry about last Friday. I didn't, to all the league listeners, didn't get the mention of last night's meeting on the air. Sorry about that. Okay. Oh, they also, League of Women Voters, have a statement on the Keystone Pipeline moving forward. Our new president, I just choke up from saying his name anymore. So our new president wants it to happen. And as well as the pipeline through the Dakota Native American water supply, too. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting, too, because the Trans-Canada Keystone XL pipeline was nixed sort of by Obama and Congress, really, too. And the leader of Canada, Justin Trudeau, the prime minister up there, he was relieved because he really got elected as a liberal on an environmental pro-environment platform. And he had pretty much decided it wasn't good for the environment, even in Canada, to be doing that kind of, it's the shale, it's a land, is a strip mining, or whatever to get to. Anyway, it's a very environmentally unfriendly process of getting the shale oil into liquid oil and getting it into the pipe. And this pipeline has to run all over from Canada all the way down to Mexico.
Mexico, right.
What in the world? And, of course, we're talking about a huge amount of oil and terrible pollution in Canada and further terrible pollution if ever springs a leak anywhere here in America. He was pretty happy to drop the whole thing, too. But now Trump has said, oh, it's on. Oh, yeah, we're going to do it. Whoop-dee-doo. And so he's in a pinch there because he's not in favor of it. By all of his pro-environment principles, he's not in favor of it. So what is he going to do? Probably won't take any meetings with the President Trump anymore, since they just called off a big meeting because the Mexican president said last couple of events he wouldn't come. And then right. Trump turns it around and said, well, by mutual decision, we both decided not to do it.
Yeah.
And the Mexican president shot back, I decided first.
He said that, yes.
I'm not going to, you can't talk to this guy. Crazy. Anyway, and then Trump said, whoa, we're going to put a 20% surcharge on anything coming across the border. Is that like Ford Focus coming across the border from Mexico? So a $20,000 car is going to cost you $4,000 more to buy here in America. What do you think about that, folks? You want to buy your Ford Focus for $4,000 more thanks to our new president just to build a wall or whatever he's going to spend the money on? Anyway, the League of Women Voters are against it. And they've got a strong statement. They sent it to the president. That's right, the new president. And who knows what that means. But they're always active on these issues. So good organization to support. Okay, John, a couple of minutes. There was some cultural news there about the Open Book Theater downriver.
Yes, Jay, we've got a play that's happening at the Open Book Theater Company called Boy Gets Girl. And the artistic director is a Groseal Township woman named Krista Schaefer Eubank. And it's about an awkward blind date and all the problems that come with that. And this theater, the shows are happening this weekend, and it'll close after this weekend.
You've got to get up there this weekend.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Open Book is new, and they're trying hard to get your attention. Live theater is really special. Nothing like it, folks. That's right. There's no other medium of entertainment and really education, too, sometimes, that's like it. And I highly recommend live theater as well as live music performances in the Detroit area. So check it out, as they say. We'll be back again next Friday. Thank you very much, John.
Yep.
And thanks to Arab American News, Preston Guide, Times Herald, and all the other Metro Times, of course, all the other sources that what will we do without them? So support your non-fact, a non-fake news source, please. Support them as much as you can. And now, yes, it is time for Highway 61. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Time. That's where my baby stays.